Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, live in the green space. And remember, when we're in the green space, you can watch the Brian Lehrer Show as well as listen. Just go to the live video stream on the WNYC webpage or the Facebook feed or the green space webpage or Facebook feed. And yesterday, New York City took what could be a big step toward integrating public schools. 5 years ago, many people were surprised when a UCLA civil rights project found New York City to be the home of the most segregated schools in the nation. Think about that. Not even Alabama or Mississippi are more segregated according to the way they measured in that survey. But yesterday, Mayor de Blasio's Task Force on School Desegregation released initial recommendations for a new set of changes. The School Diversity Advisory Group, which was made up of 40 people, that's a lot of 40 people, a lot of people to get to a consensus with, urged leaders to move more ambitiously to create schools that match the city's diversity. Now, as our listeners know, this is one of the most contentious issues right now. The city is already facing a lawsuit and accusations of racism against Asian Americans for its plan to diversify the city's elite high schools. So here to talk about this are WNYC education reporter Jessica Gould, and she's joined by two people from the Mayor's Commission, Matt Gonzalez, director of the School Diversity Project at the education group New York Appleseed, and City College student and chief of staff of the group Integrate NYC, Franzi Luzencourt. Thank you all for being on the Green Space stage. Good morning.
Thank you. Hi.
Thanks for having us.
So, Jessica Gould from our newsroom, from your reporting, what's new about this action that the mayor wants to take?
So I think one thing that's new is how direct it is. The previous report from the administration a couple years ago didn't even use the words integration and segregation. This does, and it explicitly says that integration is beneficial to students. That's a major step for the city and for the administration to be vocalizing that. The other thing that I think is new and interesting is the scope of how they define integration. This is something that Matt and I have talked about. They aim to broaden it, not just to be about moving bodies from one school to another, but looking at who's doing the teaching, what's being taught, culturally responsive education and curricula, suspensions, lowering them, and more restorative justice, and a suite of other things that go into the school climate and broader education of the students.
Matt, you want to pick up on that? What's important here and what's actionable?
Sure. So I just want to make very clear, none of the members of the advisory group work for the mayor. And so this is a very independent process from the mayoral structure. And so what happens from kind of yesterday to going forward really will be dependent on Mayor de Blasio and Chancellor Carranza. We're super hopeful they take everything that we've written and all the recommendations into account. And so part of, you know, really to kind of touch on Jessica's point, there's a history of desegregation efforts that happened in this country that were really just strictly about moving bodies. And in many of those cases in the South, because the North northern cities did add very, very little to nothing to do to support integration and have insulated themselves, which is why New York City is one of the most segregated. But many of the efforts that happened really were just about importing black and brown kids into white spaces. And what we know from that history is that while there were some benefits and opportunities that happened for a handful of black and Latinx kids, we know that they experienced tremendous violence, both intellectual and physical. The structure of teaching that was kind of imposed on them was not culturally competent. And so we really, I think part of, I'd love Franzi to talk a little bit about this, but part of the work that we've done is try to expand what integration means beyond just the movement of kids into spaces, because the implication that Franzi or I sitting next to a white student is somehow, there's somehow magical things that are going to happen is a racist and a classist kind of narrative. But there is something democratic and beautiful about us sitting in diverse spaces. And there is something powerful about sitting in educational spaces that affirm and engage young people based on their identities and through an inclusive process.
Franzi, want to pick it up?
Definitely. And I echo the sentiment that it's more than just about the movement of bodies. If you look at the preliminary report, it shows that we have defined something called real integration. And that's something that Integrate NYC and the students across the city have been spending time developing and what that looks like. And we believe that this is the way for integration to become successful and for it to move beyond just the movement of bodies by taking into account the relationships between the groups of students and of space, and how we acknowledge the cultures and identities of students of color and the trauma that they may face from within their communities, and how we can adapt for that in the educational space, as well as looking at restorative justice practices and how we can look at segregation not just from who's here and who's there and who's in what classroom, but also who's being removed from the classroom by policies that of punishment, right? And we also look at socioeconomic status, language learning, and essentially we have developed a 5R platform, representation, race and enrollment, relationships across groups, resource allocation, and sort of justice. And we believe that when you have a 5-prong approach, one that takes into account each and every part, we can have an integration that is progressive, is meaningful, is impactful, and it'll build on what has been started 65 years ago and have a positive and long-lasting impact.
Franci, can I ask you about your own experience a little bit and how much it informed your views and your interest in participating in this advisory group? You're currently an undergrad
yes.
at CUNY, right?
Yes.
Did you go to public schools in New York City? Did you come up through the system?
Yes, I graduated from public high school in South Brooklyn in 2016.
And was there anything, either looking back or mm-hmm. as you were coming up through it at the time, that informed what you feel is important in terms of this effort?
I mean, definitely. I know I've been with Integrate for a couple of years, and one of the biggest pieces that I advocate for include relationships across group identities. And that's because I did go to a high school that was predominantly white. And I understood the type of relationships and tensions between students of color and white students within the classroom. And I also participated, thanks to Integrate NYC, in a school exchange. And I looked at a school that was the exact opposite demographics in the South Bronx. So from that high school experience, I was able to look at what different schools looked like, what different schools had access to. Why did I go to a school that was predominantly white, where in the neighborhood houses can go for a couple million dollars? We had 30 MacBooks in each classroom, whereas there's a school in the same city in the South Bronx that are still using projectors and writing on boards in 2016, and they didn't necessarily have access to that technology. So I would definitely say my high school experience informed me. It gave me great insight as to how the education system really works, and basically looked at access from a personal perspective.
And I know you've all emphasized that this plan is not just about moving bodies mm-hmm. to put white kids and kids of color in the same room, but it's somewhat about that. And I'm curious if your experience having come up in a mostly white school makes you think, oh, we need more of that because I benefited from that, or that's kind of missing the point.
I mean, I would personally say that's missing the point, although I can definitely say that I have had the privilege of those economic access and opportunities because I went to a school that's predominantly white. My question would rather be, why did I have to wake up at 6:30 and travel an hour and a half to a different neighborhood, to a school that had people that didn't necessarily look like me, to receive those opportunities? And if I was not fortunate enough to score high on standardized tests and do well in middle school to get into that school, what would my path been like? Would I be sitting here today speaking to you if I went to a school that was across the street from my house?
Matt, do you want to continue on that point?
Yeah, so, Franci, I think, eloquently described kind of the tension there. And so, like, there's something very powerful and democratic about creating diverse educational spaces, and that's part of the commitment that we have toward this work, and I think, and I'm hopeful, elevates from this report. But there's also a law that states that all kids are supposed to receive a sound basic education, and that law has not been followed for over a decade. There's also priorities and push in the city among advocates and communities of color for culturally responsive education. And so part of this work is really about thinking through, what does segregation actually look like? The narrative we have is that, oh, it's these poor black and brown kids segregated in their schools. But in New York City, the school demographics are such that 15%, around 15% of the students are white. So when you have a school like Franci's, which was, I believe, over 60% white, you start to see that as a white segregated enclave. And so there's around 110 schools across this city that operate as enclaves of privilege where through screening and other selective or exclusionary admissions methods have excluded students of color and operate as these kind of spaces where opportunity and privilege can be concentrated. And so there's intense concentrations of privilege and vulnerability. And what the report we're calling for is really just about representation, ensuring that all schools in every community serve all kids and reflect the diversity of our communities, not just by race and class, but by linguistic diversity, by religious diversity, by the very rich diversities that this city has to offer. And right now, we're not doing that. And in many ways, it's a very intentional choice that has been made in this city.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the initial recommendations of the school desegregation task force that Mayor de Blasio had impaneled and came out with its recommendations, at least initial recommendations yesterday. The School Diversity Advisory Group, made up of 40 people, and we have two of them here. Matt Gonzalez, director of the School Diversity Project at the education group New York Appleseed. He was just speaking. And Francie Luzencourt, who is a City College student and chief of staff of the group Integrate NYC. And we have WNYC's Jessica Gould, who's reporting on this. Listeners, we could take a few phone calls if you have questions or comments. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And audience here in the green space, same as before, raise your hand and somebody will come around with a microphone if you want to participate. Jessica, I see the report recommends that districts, the various school districts and neighborhoods around the city, come up with desegregation plans. Who's required to do what under mayoral decree now, and who's just being asked to do what?
My understanding is that right now people are just being asked to come up with plans. You can say more about that. But I wanted to say that one of the shortcomings that some of the advocates who've criticized elements of the report have pointed out is that it doesn't go far enough on issues of enrollment and admissions, admissions as something that keeps schools segregated. And you know, these other nine districts are supposed to come up with their own plans, but it's not clear exactly how they will do that or who will be holding their feet to the fire to do it. And the other thing that people have been talking about is that there wasn't enough about abolishing screens altogether as an instrument of segregation or addressing...
Screens meaning admission processes for different schools?
Right, and selections on who gets in. And I think the other issue that people have talked about is gifted and talented programs. These things that select for students and then contribute to segregation in these schools.
Well, are you against that altogether, Matt? Like, would the ideal system for you be all the names of every student in New York City is put into, you know, like a random number generator, and then people go to the schools with, you know, whoever they're picked, along with, and all screens, as they're called in this context, are abolished, and that would be race, class, IQ, anything else that they use?
Yeah, so unfortunately, it's just not. It wouldn't be that simple, even if there was a wand to wave in the city, because of the function of residential segregation, but also the way that the community school districts, there's 32 community school districts, those were drawn, I believe, in the 60s or 70s by folks who had very specific intentions to segregate the city beyond just the residential segregation. So, you know, a kind of an open enrollment with like weighted lotteries would not necessarily work, and so that's part of why. The plan really calls for communities to be at the forefront of designing what pro-diversity admissions look like. And I think from our perspective, at least from New York Appleseed's perspective, we don't believe that 9- and 10-year-old kids should be measured based on their attendance, their test scores, their tardiness, because those a lot of those are actually economic factors. And so we do think that these types of admissions methods are designed to exclude people from schools. They were designed during a different era to draw white people back into the system. I think that there was some logic behind that, but I also think that created a sense of entitlement around certain schools and certain mechanisms for admissions. And so, you know, I think for us, the primary step is about just dismantling the system of barriers to access that exist in the city, and they're all over. And so I think there's some strong language in the report around gifted and talented programs, around screened admissions. But because the report is already 108 pages, not counting the appendix, if we were to build in recommendations specifically around these other kind of admissions methods, it would probably have been a 200-page report, if not longer. And we also felt that the town halls we did, the engagement with community engagement we didn't necessarily focus on these very kind of hyper-specific issues. And so part of our process between now and our next report is to really do more community engagement. And that, I think for us is really a priority because as many have seen, the backlash to the mayor's specialized high school proposal, we didn't want to necessarily walk down that same path. And so we're really committed to engaging the community in an authentic way so that the recommendations we do make about screens and gifted and talented are fully informed by the public.
Let's take a phone call on line 8, Veronica in Soho. You're on WNYC. Thank you for calling, Veronica. Hi. Veronica, you there? Maybe we don't have Veronica. Maybe we should try another one. How about line 10, Mercedes in Brooklyn? Mercedes, can you hear me? All right. I guess we have some phone trouble. We do have a question here in the green space. Hi there.
Hello. I'm a former educator, guidance counselor, and recently I started to do some work with junior high school students for high school admissions. And what I have found, and I'm not sure if this report bears it out, is that many of the students, I worked with two students, and one of the problems that I see, and I grew up in a long time ago and went to school a long time ago, where you went to one high school. Now we have these specialized high schools of math, science, law, and many of these students, the criteria to get in there is pretty high. So that, I think, contributes also to the segregation. And what has happened is the two students that I worked with stayed locally in schools that perhaps were not at the level of the others because they had to travel. So how is this being addressed in this report, and what recommendations are being made so, they don't have to travel mm-hmm. like they used to, shipping bodies over to different schools just to
Jessica,
integrate.
Do you want to take this?
Well, I think the concern, and I'd love to hear from you guys on this, but I think the concern is that this report doesn't address that enough. It doesn't address the sorting that happens as a result of these selective admissions processes. I understand that the second report that's going to come out by the end of the year will have more recommendations and perhaps stronger recommendations on that. But I did talk to a student with the group Teens Take Charge yesterday who was saying that she feels a real urgency around this because since the UCLA report came out 5 years ago, a whole cohort of students have moved through the high schools, and there hasn't been a meaningful change, to her eyes, on the experience from an integration standpoint.
Would you, Francie, like to see no screens?
I mean, I kind of echo similarly to Matt Gonzalez's point about we can't necessarily do something that swift. I think it has to be, more things have to be taken into account. And also, I would kind of say, when it comes to school admissions, kind of what I was talking about earlier with my experience of traveling and I would have to a different school and the schools in my neighborhood is that I think a lot of times we focus a lot on making sure students can go to this school or that school. But I think something that needs to be included in the conversation when it comes to this diversity and improving equity in education overall is what can we do to ensure that schools across the city are equitable and provide students a sound and basic education, like the law says, instead of necessarily getting too hyper-specific and making sure that this group can go to this school or that can go to that school. I think that's something that needs to be included in the conversation. What can we do to ensure that?
As we talk about the new diversity and integration blueprint that came out from the de Blasio administration yesterday. This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio, and I think we fixed our phone problem, so let's try Mercedes in Brooklyn again. Mercedes, are you there?
Yes, yes, I'm waiting patiently.
Thank you for your patience. I think we got you now.
2 points. I was on the school board of a school right across the street from the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Many of our students went to Brooklyn Technical High School and went on to become lawyers, doctors, what have you, plumbers. As soon as there was a large population of people from Asia, and that surrounding area, suddenly the criteria was no longer that you had to live within a certain radius. They opened it up all the way to Queens and gave the students from China, Korea, these countries, first preference, in spite of the fact that we had students who scored very high also here. So that's one of the issues, how they changed to accommodate certain groups, okay? The second thing is, I would like to see a greater representation of other cultures in the staff at the schools. I have friends who have been in the system for over 30 years, and there's a lack of sensitivity. As someone addressed there about issues, let's say, in the Black community, the Hispanic community, when students arrive at school, they are treated as though they are coming from upstate New York with affluence. So I would like a cultural diversity among the staff also. Thank you, Brian. Keep up the good work, and good I'll question. Give you a trip to Costa Rica one of these days.
Thank you very much. I've been there twice. It's one of my favorite places in the world, actually. So, Matt, to Mercedes' second point, staff diversity, faculty diversity, is part of this report, right?
Absolutely. So one of the kind of historic losses of the desegregation efforts of the South was the mass firing of Black teachers, which this country has never recouped those educators. So in New York City, but across the country, there's a dearth of Black, Latinx, and Asian educators in our classrooms. There's a wealth of wonderful academic research that suggests that just having a teacher that reflects your identity, just having a teacher of color, not just for Black and Latinx and students of color, but also for white students, just increases academic achievement and opportunity. So, like, for us, you know, the that's why we really wanted to think comprehensively about this, that, again, you know, the work of integration needs to be not just about moving bodies, but about moving practice, moving pedagogy, moving resources. I mean, ensuring that we have faculty and staff that represent our students, so that when, you know, I'm a former teacher, but I'm one of the men of color who, after 5 years in the classroom, were like, I gotta go because this is a toxic space. So we're really committed to ensuring that teachers of color and faculty and staff and administrators and leadership are brought in, and not just brought in, but retained into the system, so that we can have a holistic educational space.
We have another question here in the green space. Where is that? I'm not seeing the microphone. Oh, back there. Hi.
Hi. So it seems like one of the main issues is figuring out which schools students are going to be going to and how they get into those schools, and that there's a lack of kind of a baseline for what the schools are provided with as far as technology, like you were saying. Does it seem like maybe one thing that would help would be, like, instead of focusing on where the kids go to school, more keeping kids local to home, so that issue is kind of taken away, and making sure the schools in those neighborhoods have enough diversity within the school itself, so that you can go to whatever school it is, and if you're really good at math, you go to this certain classroom instead of a whole different school. So that's just a thought.
I mean, I would definitely say that we shouldn't, our first, the first thought that we think of when it comes to diversity and desegregation, I definitely do agree that it shouldn't necessarily have to take people to these far distant communities in the city of New York. I do believe that overall we need to do a better job of making sure that our communities across the city, because as we know, New York is a diverse city and different communities based on housing integration and whatever the demographics look like of 2019, they all serve different types of communities. And I do think that the schools in those neighborhoods should cater to those communities in some way and also still have the resources that they need. I also believe that, you know, it would be, I think that would necessarily be the idea. I know a lot of times there's pushback from parents that they don't necessarily feel safe about having their students travel across the city. And personally, I wasn't necessarily a fan of traveling an hour and a half, but that seemed like the only option. And I do think it would be powerful if we can give students the option to get excellence and equity in education from their own communities. And that inherently does say something about people that look like them and the access to opportunities
they have. We're just about out of time. Jessica, I wonder if you can put a sort of personal advice cast on this a little bit. We're talking about policy and desegregation, and I know there's a new report just out today from Inside Schools, which is known for helping parents navigate the many different school choices that there are out around the city. And I gather the new one has to do with, very much takes diversity into account as one of the criteria. So what can individual parents do who care about this while the city is hashing out its policies?
That's a really good question. I think you do have an email address for tips about what people want to see going forward.
Yeah, it's, I'm probably going to butcher this, nycsdag@gmail.com. There's a website, NYC School Diversity, NYC.org. I may be failing that too, but Google that stuff, you'll be close.
All right. Well, we're going to ask the mayor about this when he comes on the show on Friday. Please, and obviously do continue to cover it. So we thank WNYC education reporter Jessica Gould, Matt Gonzalez, director of the School Diversity Project at New York Appleseed. He was on the mayor's desegregation advisory committee, and Francie Luzencourt, chief of staff of Integrate NYC. He's an undergraduate at City College and was also in that 40-person advisory group. Thank you all so much for joining
us. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you for having us.